The scripture reading this morning will be coming from Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths.
Keeping with the theme for the year that we've been looking at and the goal of making God's choice, trying to look to his word and see how he would have us live, how he would have us to direct our lives, we're going to be shifting in this month to begin talking about the home. And particularly as we talk about the home, like we do so often with the church, we are reminded that the home is not four walls. It's not talking about the square footage of a structure. It's not talking about the picket fence that may or may not be outside of that home, or the ideal of what we have when we picture maybe a house, a dwelling place for that home, but a reminder that we're talking about the people that compose and make up that home. It's important because we realize that to strengthen the home, to build it up, that each component of that home, the people that make up that home, must be striving to develop in their role within that home or within that family. And so this month, we're going to be talking about that very idea and starting with this concept or this topic that the family begins with God. It's the very starting place that we need to consider as we consider the home. What does it look like? How should it be structured? How should it operate? What is the ideal that God set up even from the very beginning? And so I want to begin with the very concept or the idea that God is the founder of the home. It's the place of all beginning, recognizing that he established and that he organized the home. And as we talk about that, we're talking about God as the architect. God is the designer, the one who drew up the very concept or the plan or the very organization of that home. When you open the pages of the Bible in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, in the beginning, God. He is the one that put all things into order. He is the one that put all things here into this structure. Even in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 4, we're reminded that every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. He is the very creator. We have to begin with that concept within our mind if we want to know what the home should look like. If we want to know what that ideal for the home is, we're going to have to go and see, what did God want? What did he desire? How do I make God's choice if I don't first know what God's choice is? And so as the creator, and not only of the home, but as the creator of us and our lives, we recognize he is the one to whom I must subject myself. He is the one that I need to look to in wisdom to see what is best, what is good, what is right. And so he has the right. He has the ability there to define what the home is, what it looks like. And he goes about doing that even from the very beginning. Take a look there in Genesis chapter 2, and there's a number of these sections that we could spend all of our time on this morning, and we're going to have to be rather brief in them. But God begins to show the establishment or laying the pattern here of the home from the very beginning. In Genesis chapter 2 and beginning there in verse 18, that the Lord said, "It's not good that the man should be alone. I will make a help meet for him." The idea from the very beginning that this is a complementary relationship. Not simply the idea that we speak well to one another, but rather it's the idea that they are working in harmony one with another to build up and to strengthen one another and work together in this home. He's going to make a help meet for him. As you look in verse 19 and verse 20, you are reminded that God has Adam name all of the animals, all of the creatures. I believe there's a point and purpose there to show Adam everybody else has a mate, not you. And not only that, those aren't your mate. I'm going to make one especially for you, one that is complementary to you. And so in verse 21, the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman, brought her unto the man. And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." God is already laying forth this pattern, or this beginning point for the marriage, for the home, for this family. And he's defining it here as this one man with one woman for life, that they are working together and complementing one another, that they are to cleave to one another for their lives. That's the design or the pattern or plan that God is putting into place here from the beginning. And there's so many places that we can go and we can learn about the home as God designed and as He purposed and He's planned. And you could go into the book of Proverbs and that great book of wisdom. You could go and look at so many positive and negative examples as you go through the pages of the Old and the New Testament. And we could go over to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, perhaps one of those great sections again that we could spend more than our time this morning on just this one chapter. But God has so much to say about the home and the family here within this chapter. One that's rather shortened. If you want the book notes or Cliff Notes version, you could go into Colossians chapter 3, verse 18 through 21. But a little more detailed given to us here in Ephesians chapter 5. So much of the wisdom really throughout this chapter speaks about forming and having a good home. Does it not begin in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 1 as dear children being followers or imitators of God? When we are making the choices and the decisions God would have us to, our role within the home and the family is going to be strengthened. We're going to be doing that which He would have us and design us to do, that we're going forth in love and doing those things. In verse 3, fornication and uncleanness and covetousness, let it not be once named among you. Are those not some components that deal there with the home as well as God is formulating it and structuring it? Not just how we live as Christians, but indeed how this home is to be structured and to operate. And so you could steal a lot of time there in Ephesians chapter 5 talking about some great lessons that are applicable to the home. But by nature, we would drop down into Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22, where he talks very specifically about some roles and how we are to structure ourselves within that home, within that family. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the Lord is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and He is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Verse 25, husbands, you love your wives, even as Christ loved the church, and He gave Himself for it. He might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. And so he's going to talk some here about the concepts and the design between the home and the church and how they're parallels there one with another. For time's sake, let us drop down into chapter 6. He talks about the parent and children relationship as well. In Ephesians 6 and verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long upon the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Here we have some verses that are going to help us understand and define what are these family relationships and what should they look like. And one of the things that I find very interesting is how closely these things work together. So much so that the family as a whole cannot excel if any one of these pieces is lacking or wanting. If one is not what it ought to be, the rest is going to suffer. You talk here about the idea of a wife. Yes, you ought to submit to your husband, allow him to be the spiritual head and the leader of the home. But if he won't lead, and if he's not leading in love, it becomes very difficult for her to follow him and to be faithful unto God. It becomes very difficult for the husband to want to provide for and to protect and to lead his wife and family when the wife refuses to follow after him and to subject in love and in the compassion that he has of her best interest towards him. If she refuses to take that role, that home cannot be what it ought to be. If children rise up in rebellion against parents and refuse to listen to the parent, the home is going to struggle. If the parent refuses to bring up their children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, to provide the instruction and the wisdom that they need to live and to grow and to be pleasing unto God, the children are going to suffer. Sometimes they want to learn, they want to grow, but the parent's not providing the instruction that they should. And so when you look at that, you're almost reminded there of the principle of 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And there Paul uses the illustration of the physical body in relation to the church and how the body works together, and so must the church. And though Paul doesn't necessarily do it there in Ephesians or 1 Corinthians 12, can you not make the same connection and link to the family? It's got to work together. It needs to work together in harmony and unison so that it can be all that God really wants it to be. That's His desire. And so He's laid out for us this pattern that we ought to be excelling at. So I have to recognize, well, God is the designer. He is the architect of this plan. If I want to know how the home is going to excel, if I want to know how it ought to operate, I've got to realize God's the founder. And so I want to go and see what is His blueprint. We've only scratched the surface of that this morning, but understand He set forth some principles by which that home is to operate. In so doing, we also need to recognize here that God is that source of wisdom. We do it with our spiritual lives. We recognize He is the Creator. He knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows what is in our best interest. Do you think that's true of the home as well? Do we argue with God and His wisdom? I don't think that's the best way. I don't think that's the best structure. I don't think that's the way in which I'm going to operate. Are we willing to submit to the wisdom of God and say, as Creator, I know that You know that which is best? Think about how Paul spoke about God in Acts chapter 17 as he has the opportunity to address the philosophers that are there on Mars Hill and in Athens. And he talks about God in Acts chapter 17 beginning in verse 24. And he said, God that made the world and all things therein. Guess what? That includes me. He is the Creator. And he tells us further in verse 24 there that He is Lord of heaven and earth. Think about Luke chapter 16 and verse 6, or 6:16, I'm sorry. Hit one of those, and you're going to see there that Jesus is going to say, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? The idea, if we're going to submit to Him as Lord, are we going to follow His will and His wisdom? And so as we think about we submit ourselves to the wisdom of God. In verse 25 of Acts chapter 17, we see that He gives to life and breath and all things. He gives to all life and breath and all things. He not only created us, He's the one who continues to sustain us. He's the one that provides for our daily needs. He's the one that provides for the things that we need as we go through life. And so we ought to be submitting to Him and to His will. In verse 26, He made of one blood all nations. Here's a common will. We all were created by Him with a singular intent in verse 27 that we all should seek after Him, though He be not very far from us. We can find Him. We can find His will, and we can know Him. And why should we do that, Paul? Because in verse 28, in Him we live and move and have our very being. He's our Creator. I'm going to listen to His wisdom. I'm going to listen to the things that He has instructed us. Think back to our reading this morning in Proverbs 3 and verse 5 and 6. Not to direct our own paths, but to submit to His wisdom. Not rely upon our own understanding, but recognize that He is far wiser. In Proverbs 14 and verse 12, we're reminded that there is a way that seemeth right unto man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. How many have thought, I'll go my own way? How many have rejected the wisdom and will of God and suffered the consequences thereof? Jeremiah in his day, in a rebellious nation of people that were turning away from God, he says in Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, "Oh Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walketh to direct his steps." I want to look to you and to your wisdom. While directly talking about the salvation in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, nevertheless, there is some principle there I think we can gain. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 20, where is the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this world? Those who exalt themselves in their own wisdom. God hath made foolish the wisdom of this world. Friends, look around. And you're seeing in our society the terrible consequences of what happens when man rejects the wisdom of God. When man says, we can do this our way, and it leads to chaos, and it leads to confusion, and it leads to wickedness, it leads to trouble, it leads to heartache, all of these things because we reject the wisdom of God. Solomon saw it in his day. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 29, he says, "Lo, this I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions." God made man right. He gave him the right will to seek after. But man pursued after many things and went from the plan of God. It's no surprise that man continues to do that today. And so we live in a society of craziness and wickedness that runs rampant in our society. And we'll talk more about that here in just a moment, but we need to rely and go back to the wisdom of God that He revealed in His Word. And part of the reasoning why is because we recognize that He is the judge of and in righteousness. He's revealing those ways and those paths that are right and good. Will we recognize it? Will we submit ourselves to it? Because one day that's a standard by which we are going to be judged. Solomon, as he finishes that book, exhorting his son to, exhorting and encouraging wisdom, saying, I've sought out all the things of this life and trying to find meaning and purpose and all these things, and they're empty and vanity. He comes to the end of the book of Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes 12, he said, I wrote many words of truth. And he exhorts in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13 and 14, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. What should we do? Where will we find meaning and purpose? Fear God and keep His commandments, for therein is the whole of man. There is your meaning and there is your purpose, but even beyond that, don't forget to throw in verse 14. Where Solomon also included, for God shall bring every work into judgment and every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Your lives are going to be judged on the fact, did we live according to God and His will? Did we subject ourselves to Him and follow after Him? To his son in Proverbs 5 and verse 21, he said, the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and He pondereth all his goings. There's nothing you're going to hide from God. There's nothing that's going to remain secret. And it's interesting in that chapter, if you were to back up in the earlier verses of Proverbs chapter 5, a lot of the warnings there have been that you guard yourself against unfaithfulness, even to your wife. Don't be turned away by the flattering woman. Don't be turned away to go into other paths. but you remain faithful. And part of the reason why there is because God knows all your steps. He knows all of your ways. Paul reminds us in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10 that all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things that he has done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. There's nothing hidden. God is going to know all things. We know we will stand before him one day. Even the Hebrew writer there in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4, speaking more directly of marriage and the home and the family. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. But the fornicators and the adulterers, God will judge. Does he care about the standard of marriage? Does he care about the home? Does he care about how it's structured? Yes. And Peter tells us in 2 Peter 1 and verse 3, he's given us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. He's shown us how to live. And so as we begin thinking about the home, we have to recognize God is the very founder. He is the architect and the planner of that home. But then number two, we also need to recognize and put at the very center of it the idea that God is the foundation of the home. When we think about the foundation, we might think of a modern-day slab as it's poured out. And that slab, depending on how it is prepared, especially here in some areas of Texas, is going to tell you a lot about the integrity and the structure of that home. Is it going to settle and crack and have problems in future years? Or is it founded upon a bedrock that's going to stand solid? You could think about maybe even a more biblical thought there of maybe the cornerstone. The idea that you would place the chief cornerstone of a building. And that cornerstone is the point after which everything else that goes up is going to be built upon it. If you misorient that cornerstone, your whole building's going to be off from the design and the plan of the architect. If it's not set just right, the building's not going to be what it ought to be. And so God has made the pattern. He's the planner and the architect. Are you going to build upon that foundation? And so as we speak there, we're talking about the idea of integrity and stability within the home. A psalmist said in Psalm 127 and verse 1, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh in vain. If you're not looking to God, if you're not building according to His plan, it's not going to work. How many times, especially through the Old Testament, do we see man saying, I'll do it my own way, and met defeat every time? And so God is the starting point. He is the rock upon which the home must be built. If it's weak, because we don't follow the pattern, we don't follow the blueprint that God set out, don't be surprised when it cracks and it crumbles and it does not stand up under the test of time. And so the very idea there of being this rock and this cornerstone. Go for a moment over to Matthew chapter 7. We're going to take some principles here as Jesus is wrapping up the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 7, and look there beginning in verse 24, as Jesus is wrapping up this section that we so often call the Sermon on the Mount. He says, therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon the rock. Luke is going to include there that this is one who really dug down deep, reached the bedrock so it would be solid. He built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that home, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. As we make direct application to Jesus, he's teaching us how to be his disciples. He's teaching us how to follow him. And you're going to follow his will and walk with him. But I want you to make an application there that Jesus has some things to say about the home. Jesus has to say some things about the family and how it is structured. Is that not included in what he's talking about here? If you will listen to these sayings of mine and do them, you can have a house built upon the rock that's going to stand the test and the trials of time. You back up into Matthew chapter 5 and verse 27 through 30. There are teachings against lust and adultery. Is he not guarding the home and telling us how as disciples to prepare ourselves for the worries and the cares of this world? You continue in the next section in Matthew 5, verse 31 through 32. There are teachings against divorce, save for the cause of fornication. Does God honor the marriage vow and the marriage relationship? Is that part of the teaching and the words that he says, listen to these things of mine and follow them? And in the very next section, is it a surprise that maybe he shifts away from the very direct concept of marriage, but in verse 33 through 37 about honoring oaths, let your yea be yea? Do you think that applies to the marriage vow? To the promise to care for, to support and encourage one another? Do you think it applies to the vow that we have as parents when we bring children into this world to then raise them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord and to be faithful unto those promises that we've made? Jesus spoke about this idea of building upon that home. Another interesting concept you can make some draws and application from in Matthew chapter 15, verse 8 and 9. This people draws nigh unto me with their lips or their mouth. They honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Again, we make pretty broad and rightly so applications to that as men drift away from the teachings of God. But do you know what the example that Jesus gave there is in the preceding verses? Children, honor your parents, but yet you've come up with a clever way that you created a loophole in your mind whereby children can dedicate those things to God even if they don't give them Corban, and then they don't have to support their parents. You've corrupted the concept and the laws that God set forth for the marriage and for the home and for the family. And you can't do so without directly contradicting God. And so, you honor me with your lips, but your heart's far from me. We need to be people that are seeking after and knowing the will of God. Matthew 19:9, Jesus is asked about divorce and putting away of a spouse. Did you remember where he goes? In the beginning, it was not so. He goes back to Genesis chapter 2, where we started, and he said, let me take you back to God's blueprint. Let me take you back to God's pattern and to his plan. He made them, Matthew 19 and verse 4, male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. They are no more twain, but one flesh. Wherefore, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. He cared about the home. He cared about its stability. And we ought to as well. Are we building upon that foundation that God designed and put into place? And then understand that we need to be reminded that this is a divine institution. It is what God designed. He's the one who created it. He's the one who set it into place. Man's wisdom so often separates from the plan and the will of God, and they erode and chip away at this foundation. But we have to be reminded, you can call it what you want, but that doesn't make it so. Has not man done that with marriage? Our laws and our courts and our society wants to define marriage and wants to define love and wants to define home and wants to define the family however it sees fit. But that doesn't make it so. It hasn't changed God's plan and structure. Again, look at the book of Galatians for just a moment. Galatians chapter 1. Galatians chapter 1, verse 6 and 7. And apply this same principle to what we're talking about for the home. Paul said there, he said, I marvel that you are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of God unto another gospel. I taught you the gospel, but you've turned and you're following something else. Verse 7, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and would pervert the gospel of Christ. What's he telling them? You're following something that is called a gospel, but it's not the same gospel. It's not the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you can call it a gospel, but that doesn't make it so. It is a gospel of another sort, another nature, not a gospel of the same sort. Here's the gospel that's delivered by the wisdom of God, revealed by inspiration unto man. That's what we've preached and taught unto you. But if you change it, if you alter it, if you put it according to your own will, it's no longer the gospel of God. It's the gospel of man. It's man's will. It's man's wisdom. And it's destined to fall. It's not honoring and glorifying God. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, we are told that we are to let our light shine before men, that they may see our good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven. When we follow God's will and His pattern, and the world sees that, they see the glory of God, and they see the wisdom of God. If we alter and change that, even in ways that we think are minute or not that important, guess what? The world is now seeing our wisdom, not the wisdom of God. If I want them to glorify God, I've got to live according to the will of God. I have to follow His will or His pattern. In Romans 12 and verse 2, be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your minds, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Don't put your wisdom on display. See for yourself and show the world the wonderful wisdom of God by building upon the foundation in the home that God has designed and set forth for us. See, the home is not a man-made institution. We don't get to decide what it is. It's God's design. It's God's definition. It's His will that we need to be seeking after. And so again, man makes up many inventions, and he calls it what he wants, but that doesn't mean it's acceptable or honoring to God. We need to remember God is the foundation of the home, as He is also the founder of the home. And then finally this morning, let's recognize God is to be the focus of the home. He is to be the very center point. We ought to have here individuals who have the mindset of Colossians chapter 3, that we have set our affections on things that are above and not on things of the earth. What are we centering our lives around? What are we as individuals? Do we have two individuals that are interested in one another and coming together and forming a home and forming a family that are both of the same mind, that they want to honor and serve God in their lives and in their families, that are going to be a help meet for one another, that are going to encourage one another? And if one day the Lord blesses that union with children, that they're going to work together, not to bring about confusion in their children, but work together to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to encourage them to come to know God and to follow Him and His will, so that ultimately they can go forth and do the same in their lives and be an example unto others. As we talk about God being the focus of the home, let's think about Him being the idea of the priority of the home. Think about Matthew 6 and verse 33. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Yes, the very direct context of the putting the spiritual things of seeking after God above the physical concerns and needs of this life. But do we desire to honor God at the very center of our lives, in the relationships that we spend more time with in this life than in any other? In those relationships in which we're helping one another strive to get to our eternal and heavenly home? Does our home life revolve around God and focus upon Him? Do we set our schedule around God? Or do we schedule God around our worldly lives and worldly concerns? What do we see coming first? What is prioritized in our home. We need to understand as well, this means the idea of the direction of the home. Where are we going? What are we doing? Again, love to spend all morning talking about Deuteronomy chapter 6. Well, let's come back to that in just a moment. Think first of Joshua. Joshua chapter 24 and verse 14 and 15. Joshua knew where he was going and he knew where he was going to lead his home. Fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and truth. Put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and you serve the Lord. If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you're going to serve. Make a choice, make a decision. Is it going to be the gods that your father served on the other side of the flood, or the God of the Amorites in whose land you now dwell? But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. There was direction. We know where we're going. Regardless of the consequence, regardless of the things that happen in this life, we are going to honor and serve God. Set the direction for our homes. He's first. He is prioritized in our home. He's the direction that we're going to follow after. And then also understand that this includes the idea of training. We're training up one another. We're encouraging one another. And we're helping train up even future generations. I mentioned Deuteronomy chapter 6. That's another one of those chapters we could spend all morning. But again, very interesting that Moses there, the mouthpiece for God. And he's encouraging them, you need to know the commandments of the Lord your God. And you need to follow them. Speaking first to those adults of this generation. You know God. You know His commandments and His statutes and His judgments that He has instructed you. That you, verse 2, might fear the Lord thy God to keep all of His commandments and statutes that I have commanded you, thou and thy son's son, all the days of thy life, that thy days may be prolonged. Teach. You know it first. You live it first. But then you teach it to those successive generations that they also might know the Lord. And so as you drop down into these verses, into about verse 6 and 7, he's reminding them, these things are to be in your heart. In verse 7, you shall teach them diligently unto your children. Talk of them when you're sitting in your house, when you're walking by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets before your eyes. Thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. Make it a part of your life. Make it a focus. Make it a priority that you're teaching others about God, because we know Deuteronomy 6 and verse 24, these things were for your good always. He's protecting you if you will listen to the wisdom and instruction of God. What better things can we be teaching and learning and growing in our homes than those things that we know are given to us by the inspiration of God? 2 Timothy 3, verse 16 and 17. Those things that are profitable, those things that are good for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto every good work. Our homes can honor and glorify God, but we're going to have to make Him the focus of our homes. I struggle because we've only scratched the surface of everything that we could have talked about this morning. But I hope it's a reminder that indeed our families must begin with God. He's the founder of the home. He's the creator, the designer, the architect, the one who set it into motion, the one whose wisdom we need to rely on and look to for guidance and direction in our lives. He is to be the foundation upon which our homes should be built, to structure off of, to look to His will, to say, this is how we're going to live. This is how we're going to structure our home. This is what's going to be taught, and this is what's going to be done, that our homes can be all that God would have them to be, fulfilling that plan there that we looked at in Ephesians 5 and Ephesians 6. And then finally, that sobering question, is God the focus of our home? Is He what we're concentrated on? Does He have a place of priority and focus and direction and training in our homes? And if not, what can we strengthen? What can we build up as individuals within that home and as the family as a whole of itself? We're going to strengthen our homes because the stronger our homes are, the stronger we are as individual Christians, the stronger our congregation is, the stronger our reach and our impact as we go forth into this community and as we go forth into this world. And so we hope those are some challenging thoughts to help us to grow and evaluate, examine ourselves and our lives. We've been talking about the home, we've been talking about the family, but we also have a great family here, and that is the family of God. And it's composed of those members who make up that home as well, who are a part of the body of Jesus Christ that loved us, that cared for us, that died for us, that we might have an eternal home with Him in heaven. It's also a question we have to ask ourselves, am I a part of that family? Perhaps there's one visiting with us this morning, or one who knows, I'm not yet a part of that family. I'd like to know more about it. We'd love the opportunity to sit down and study and learn God's will for our lives as we look to His Word for the answers and direction that we can gain therein. We'd love that opportunity to study with you. Perhaps it is that you know what you ought to be doing. And you can look to the great examples of those first century individuals who heard the gospel and believed it, were ready to put it into action in their lives. So they were repented of their sins. They confessed that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. They were baptized, immersed in water for the remission of their sins. They rose again as new creatures, having those sins washed away, and the Lord added them to the church. We see that pattern beginning in Acts chapter 2. Verse 38 and following, continuing time and again throughout the book of Acts. That when we do the same thing that they did in the first century, we can enjoy the same benefits and the same blessings that they did as well. Perhaps there's one that says, I began that walk, but I've separated myself from the family, and it's time to come home. It's time to repent of sin and to be restored once again. You have a family here that loves you, will encourage you, they'll surround you in prayer and support. And we'll go before the throne of the Father to ask for the forgiveness of those sins as well. And perhaps all of us can be challenged this morning. What's my role within the home, within a family, whatever that might be, that I'm going to pursue what God would have me to be and follow that pattern even more in the days going forward? That's the invitation open before us even this morning. If we could help you with it in any way, wouldn't you let it be known as together we stand as we sing.